Good evening, Empress Shenes Guerra, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly, where we get a better sense of the truth. Let's begin by dissecting the news. Tonight, New Year's Eve, we will look back at critical political issues and developments in 2021 as we head to what will be a pivotal year for Filipinos, the elections of 2022. Joining us tonight is attorney and professor Tony Lavinia. He's the former dean of the Ateneo School of Government. He's also a professor of constitutional law in many different universities, including the University of the Philippines. Good evening, sir, and thank you for joining us on this program. Happy New Year, sir.
Good evening, Christian, and good evening to all those that are watching. I hope everyone is having a good end of the year.
Okay. We'll focus on the political developments and issues in 2021. So basically, this will be a political year ender for the Philippines. Let's start with the basic or conventional wisdom that any sitting president toward the latter part of his or her administration somehow is characterized as a lame duck. Now, in the case of President Duterte, are you also seeing this kind of reality or conventional wisdom as far as the president is concerned, or somehow he's breaking that tradition?
In fact, he's even in a more lame duck situation than any other president. He has no candidate for president, as far as we know right now. Certainly as a candidate for vice president, but I think it's a reluctant support for the daughter. But this is the first time a president, in fact, but certainly since Cory Aquino, that you have a president that's not supporting a candidate to succeed him or her. In essence, I think the president is politically irrelevant now, unless he chooses to try to influence the disqualification cases against Senator Marcos, which is not right and which he should not do, because the COMELEC is independent and the Supreme Court is independent. But other than that, he is politically irrelevant.
Okay. But you talk about this
way.
He
didn't want it that way. But it turned out that way.
Okay. But how do you explain the continuing popularity of the president based on recent surveys, the fact that he still commands a particular segment of his supporters who are still backing him with good numbers at this stage of his career? How do you relate that to his what you call political irrelevance?
Well, in fact, it's related because he overestimated that support. He thought that since he's popular, he can call the shots. But what I think he misunderstood was that his daughter, Sarah, is an audience of one. In other words, doesn't matter what his supporters thought, what he thought. Sarah had her own mind and didn't want to run for president. And certainly didn't want to run for president with Bongo. The story, as we know, is the president first either wanted Bongo to run for president with him as vice president, or Sarah to run for president if Sarah really wants to, but with Bongo as vice. So here, but the popularity doesn't matter when you have an audience of one or audience of few for the decisions that have to be made. Certainly, the president is popular. But even in the Philippines, popularity of a president did not necessarily extend to an endorsement power. But here the worst is he doesn't have anyone to endorse even right now. He's boxed himself into a corner as of now. Of course, you never rule out someone like President Duterte, right? When he's on the top of his game, and maybe the answer, Christian, is he's not on top of his game anymore. Because if he's on top of his game, he could still do certain things, right? He could endorse another candidate. He could pivot back to Marcos to be more influential. But in essence, is taking himself out of the game right now with very little, zero influence on Marcos, who's the leading candidate and seems to be the candidate of the administration. Zero influence on the vice presidential candidate, his own daughter. The funny thing is that the one with whom he has most influence right now is with Mayor Scott Moreno, who's trying to get his explicit support. It's very strange, but that's where we are. And right now, I would stick to my conclusion. President Duterte is irrelevant. And that translates to decisions to be made on all sorts of issues as president.
But in this case, do you see the whatever remains of the popularity of the president being wasted in these all-important elections? Because whatever we say about him, he still controls the resources of government. He still has so wide support as far as the surveys are concerned. So do you see all these things getting wasted because of the fact that he has no candidate at all?
Yes. Although what's happened, Christian, and we see this from the polling so far that's done, what's happened is with or without him, his supporters have moved on. And they're all now almost totally with Bongbong Marcos, partly because of the Duterte name, because Sara Duterte is there. That's the smartest thing that Marcos has done to make sure that Sara would run with him. So the Duterte supporters are with Marcos because of Sara, and maybe because already inherently that's already their inclination. And then very important as well, you will soon see, I think, a groundswell of congressmen, local government officials, governors and mayors that will be supporting that particular tandem. In other words, support right now, if you go to the field, and I do that a lot, I mean, even if it's virtual, talk to a lot of political players all over the country. They all say there's really no other candidate to choose right now that can compete with the Marcos-Duterte tandem, right? And so if you stick with President Duterte, you're basically orphan. You're lost. Without Bongo now running, without him, you know, supporting right now anyone. Basically, the candidates of PDP Laban are confused, they don't know where they should be going. They've been told to stay put. That's the order. Stay put. Wait, right? But in the meantime, the train has moved on. And in essence, that's what happened. The train has moved on. All that influence, all that power, all that and was shifted to the Duterte, to the Marcos Duterte campaign.
So in this case, is it really too late for the president, even if he decides to endorse a candidate for president in 2022? For instance, is he left with the most viable option, and that is to support a Bongbong Duterte tandem? Because otherwise, basically, other supporters have made their choices, right?
He can do that, and it will be welcome. Again, one of the smart things that Bongbong Marcos has done is not to attack President Duterte, regardless of what he has said against them. So he can do that. People expect that he will eventually do that, because why would he support, let's say, someone who might be losing, right? Mayor Isko, which is. You know, kind of the second choice for the 30 voters. He could do that. But the one thing he's still relevant, Christian, is in the case of the disqualification cases against Marcos, whether he will be, make his voice known, and whether, in fact, the COMELEC and the Supreme Court will be influenced by that voice. I do believe that the COMELEC is independent, the Supreme Court is independent. And can stand up against the President Duterte, but he can make his sentiments known. So far, he hasn't said anything about disqualification. He said things about the personal qualities of Bongbong Marcos. He said things about Bongbong's supposed cocaine addiction. I mean, he hinted about that. But he hasn't said anything about the disqualification.
But even if he decides to, let's say, exert influence on the Commission on Elections or perhaps even later on the Supreme Court, well, how strong or weak would this influence still be, given the fact that we're looking at the big numbers of Bongbong Marcos? When you talk about political, when you talk about politics in the Philippines, basically people gravitate toward the most likely presidential or winner in the next presidential elections. So what kind of influence are we still talking about here?
Well, you know, the numbers, I mean, let's put it this way. The COMELEC is independent, and I know some people there, they're certainly very independent. The Supreme Court is independent. They're made up of now mostly career justices. So I would expect them not to be influenced by the president. On the other hand, you know, all of the COMELEC by the time, well, no, because this decision will be made by December or January by the COMELEC. So you will still have two commissioners that are appointed by President Aquino. So it will not be an all Duterte COMELEC, but mostly majority would be Duterte appointed. Certainly the Supreme Court majority, a big majority, would be Duterte appointed. But as I said, that's not a guarantee that she has influence. It takes a lot of risk also in doing that. And there's some wishful thinking about some Duterte followers that, well, Marcos will be disqualified, but it will be done after the elections, when he can no longer be substituted by IME. Or when, you know, and therefore the vice president elect is going to be the one that will be taking over if the president elect is disqualified. So this wishful thinking about that, but I think that's wishful thinking to expect that the Supreme Court will follow a timeline that President Duterte wants, and you know, that kind of thing. That's really conspiratorial thinking that has no basis in my view.
Okay, before I ask the other questions, as a lawyer, what do you think in the first place of those disqualification cases and also petitions to deny due course to the candidacy of former Senator Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr.? Do they really have a very strong basis?
There is a strong basis, let's put it that way. But there's also strong arguments why they should be dismissed. The ultimate one is political question. I mean, the ultimate one is, especially a leading candidate, you should not disqualify a leading candidate, a candidate that has, you know, seems to have the support of many people, because you're depriving then the people of their choice. That is political law 101. I mean, that certain things have to be decided by the people and not by the law and not by the courts. But technically, you can disqualify Marcos without any difficulty, I think, in terms of legal gymnastics. You don't have to twist the law too much to disqualify Senator Marcos. You know, when I teach this, I teach constitutional law, political law, election law. When I teach this, I always tell my students, when you look at disqualification cases, you look at the law, of course, and the jurisprudence. But more important than the law and the jurisprudence, you look at the person, the candidate being disqualified, and you look at their lawyers. Who are their lawyers? And from that, you have a sense, a combination of understanding the law, the jurisprudence, the candidate, and the lawyers. Then you can kind of predict what will happen, right? So here we'll have to see that where it goes. I'm inclined to think that most likely Bongbong Marcos will prevail in the disqualification cases because of, more than anything, the political question doctrine.
Okay, but wouldn't that be a disservice to the legal grounds that have been raised? Because basically, there are two. Number one, that he committed material misrepresentation in filing his certificate of candidacy because they didn't say that he was convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude, which could be debatable, right? By basis of his tax conviction in 1995 as upheld in 1997. But the other one, which the petitioners basically acknowledge, could be much clearer and stronger. The fact that he should be perpetually disqualified because of his violation of the tax law or the tax code. What do you think?
That's what I mean. You can actually accept that and disqualify him on that basis without difficulty. But the political question argument is an entirely different plane, which is that regardless of that, the court cannot decide this. It should be the people that should decide this. There's also another legal argument for Marcos, which has been actually imposed by the court or applied by the court many times, which is that the qualifications for president are laid down in the Constitution, and it's very simple. A voter, a citizen, a natural-born citizen, 40 years, can read and write. I mean, that's just very, very basic. Now that goes down to the question, is he a voter, right? Can he be considered a qualified voter? Because that's where the disqualifications can come in. But I go back to what I said. I would have no difficulty from a technical point of view of not disqualifying President Senator Marcos from running for the presidency. I think a COMELEC commissioner and a justice of the Supreme Court taking that position can do so in good conscience. But given our jurisprudence, the other argument about, you know, political question, about qualifications, a COMELEC commissioner and a justice of the Supreme Court can also in good conscience decide that not to dismiss the petitions for disqualification. It makes laymen angry at us lawyers, right? But that's precisely why you have this deliberation. If this was as simple as black and white, then you don't even need to go to court, right? It's just automatic. But the reason why you go to court, the reason why you deliberate, is in fact that the law requires that deliberation. And eventually the question is, do you have the numbers? Do you have the numbers in the COMELEC to disqualify, or do you have the numbers in the Supreme Court to disqualify?
Okay. At this stage, let's talk about certain lessons or realizations that we can draw out of this populist-driven campaign of President Duterte in 2016. And of course, a very populist president for the past 5 years. And at this stage, you said basically he's not just a political lame duck, but politically relevant. I mean, what lessons can we draw out of this experience? You have a person with very strongman tendencies, assailed several institutions of government, and yet basically he wasn't able to break the mold toward the end of his presidency.
It's consistent with the character, Christian, that consistent with the character of the president who defies rules, defies convention, had accumulated power, and thought he could get away with anything. But to be honest, he could not get away with his daughter's, you know, stubbornness. I think you have to grant Mayor Sara Duterte this, no? That she stood up against the wishes of the father for her to run for president, or for someone else other than her to run for president. And she stood up to that. And I think that, you know, I suspect in the end she decided that she was not ready for the presidency. But the vice presidency was doable. And she can learn the ropes there. She'll run again in 6 years' time. But she didn't also probably want to win with the support of the father. If she ran for president, no, you know, I mean, regardless of the relationship, she would perceive to, if she wins, it would be perceived because the president did everything to make her win. Now, if they win, Marcos and Sara, they will win on their own right, to be honest. They will win on their own right, but they did get this big block of voters that are Duterte supporters. That's the reason why Marcos is polling so well. More than 50%. First time ever in our surveys that someone has polled more than 50%. If he wins this with a more than 50% vote, first time ever, right? And that's not because there are 50% loyalists in the Philippine Marcos loyalists. Marcos loyalists amount only to 20-25%. But there's another group of loyalists, the 30 loyalists, who are now completely locked into the Marcos Duterte tandem. That's why they're polling this much. And geographically, it also maps to Mindanao and of course, Northern Luzon. And surprisingly, Metro Manila are where the big margins of the Duterte, of the Marcos Duterte tandem seems to be coming from.
Okay, a lot of scholars already explained what drove, what boosted, what pushed the candidacy of President Duterte and his victory in 2016. Basically, the failings of EDSA were mentioned, the so-called self-righteousness of the Dilawans, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, you have a clear picture as to why this kind of leader emerged in 2016. But in this case, there were those who were thinking, perhaps we've learned our lessons over the past 5 years and we would start thinking perhaps straight when it comes to our choices in 2022. But in this case, how do they explain this idea of seeming continuity? The fact that they would like to get or have another Marcos return to Malacanang 50 years after the declaration of martial law by the father of this leading candidate now, Duterte, and then Marcos. How would you explain that?
And to add to your musings, your reflection, which in terms of questions, this candidate or candidates, Marcos Duterte, have already taken the mantle of change. They are the change candidates in this election, Christian.
Precisely.
Amazing, no? Amazing. The answer is very simple. A good campaign strategy, clear messaging, discipline, you know, of course, a lot of money. But, you know, a lot of money is not enough. We saw that President Senator Villar had lots of money. We saw that. I mean, I think Senator Grispo had lots of money in 2016. Mar Rojas had a lot of money. So this is not explainable just by a lot of money. That's what I'm saying. I mean, with all my reluctance about the Marcos Duterte tandem, it's very important not to underestimate them. And especially Marcos, I mean, that he's run a campaign like this is quite remarkable. So the explanation is simply messaging, combination of their social media operations, their operations at the barangay level, you know what I mean, where they're ubiquitous. They're everywhere, the Marcos people. When I go to the provinces, when I ask people, you know, and they say Marcos, I mean, more, it reflects the polling, you know what I mean? 4-3 out of 5 people usually will tell me they vote for Marcos. But soft vote, you know, it's like, probably Marcos. Why? Meron bang iba? That's the question. Is there anyone else? That means the other campaigns are not able to go beyond their current bubbles, right? Or, you know, their attempts to reach the voter has so far not been successful. They have 3 more months. Not 5 months, by the way. Or not 4 months, 3 months. January to March is really where it is. After Holy Week, things will just be, you know, very clear. If the trend is like this, it's a very close. If it becomes closer, then it's okay. But usually after Holy Week, a candidate breaks out or keeps his lead, and we just leave everyone behind.
Okay, Attorney Tony Lavinia, thank you very much for joining us on this program. Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year, Mr.
We're going to take a quick break. After the fact, we'll be right back.